You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Earlier this month, Garrison Keillor stepped down from the helm of A Prairie Home Companion after 42 years as its host and as the gentle voice of Midwestern reason and dry wit.
The music, drama, and storytelling show is a public radio centerpiece for years and an entry point for new listeners at the height of its influence. It may be a coincidence that Keillor stepping down just as podcasting is taking off, but either way, it could mark the end of an era.
Our next guest says public radio is the victim of its own success. It had ratings and revenue benchmarks to uphold. It got overly cautious and risk-averse. Now, he says, with podcasts showing big growth potential and the media market changing, NPR has an opportunity to grow and adapt. Some critics have said it's already too late.
Adam Ragusa joins us now. He's a journalist in residence at Mercer University's Center for Collaborative Journalism, and he hosts and produces the weekly podcast The Pub for the public broadcasting trade publication Current. Adam, welcome to Central Time.
Glad to be with you, Veronica. Shall we commence with examining our respective navels?
I guess that's what we're doing a little bit.
Yeah.
So do you think it's fair to say that public radio is facing a turning point right now?
Yeah. I mean, I think the retirement of Garrison is a big moment. It comes not so long after Car Talk stopped making new episodes. That show still gets syndicated and a lot of stations still air it. But one of the hosts is sadly passed on. It's all sort of recycled material right now. And there's other retirements in the works, just big institutions of public radio, kind of just going away, ending. Reaching the end of their life cycle. And that's a really, really big moment. You know, a program like Prairie Home Companion, like Car Talk, we don't necessarily think of those as being the thing when we think about public radio. Like, if there's one or two programs that are the thing when we think about NPR or public radio, it's Morning Edition and All Things Considered. In our world, Veronica, we use this term called those are the tentpole programs. Those are the two things that hold up everything else, right? Those are kind of what we're here to do is Morning Edition and All Things Considered and programs like it. But programs like Car Talk and Prairie Home Companion, these weekend programs, played a very, very important role in sustaining the entire public radio system. A, they just are very, very popular and drive a lot of revenue. That's just Sorry to be crass about it, folks, but you listening, dear listeners of Wisconsin Public Radio, those are the shows that you have historically called in to support during Pledge Drive is Car Talk and Prairie Home Companion and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and a few things like it, okay? It just drives money. It's also the case that those have tended to be the programs that brought people in. People sort of stumbled onto public radio by hearing Car Talk or having a friend talk about Car Talk, and it was their gateway drug into public radio. So to lose those is very, very consequential. It's also very consequential because they're massive drivers of ratings, especially Car Talk, but also in certain, I bet that in your market, Veronica, I bet that people love Prairie Home Companion. It's that whole upper Midwest WASP sensibility that probably really speaks to your audience,
but
right?
I mean, I suppose we have to point out that it's not going away, that it's going to be transformed with Chris Thelia, new host,
yeah,
but
sure.
It's not really going to be the same show.
No, it is not at all going to be the same show.
Even Chris Thelia admits that. But so without those shows, do you think that NPR has, I mean, I guess the question is, do we need new tentpole shows to bring people in, or are there other things that public radio should be doing instead of looking for these next big shows?
I will tell you that something that has been a big topic of conversation at NPR and at any network level conversation and even at some stations, looking for a new weekend hit, that's something that public radio at the highest levels has been talking about for a long, long time. And it's something that NPR tried to do with the launch of that quiz show. The name is escaping me now. What's the new quiz show they launched a few years ago?
There's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is still
yeah.
Ask Me Another.
Ask Me Another. Yes, that's right. Thank you. So they launched Ask Me Another. That was a very, very deliberate attempt to craft and then launch a new weekend hit for public radio. And it has only been – I don't think it's fair to call it a hit. I think it has been – it's done okay, but it's not on that many stations. They tend to not program it at really, really prominent times, and it doesn't have a massive – following like Car Talk had. And to me, I also kind of can, and this is a hard thing for me to say because I have friends who participated in creating that program, but like I don't think it's that good of a show. It sounds to me to be contrived, and it because it is contrived. It's something where a bunch of people worked for a long time, really, really hard, with the deliberate aim of creating a new hit, you know, nerdy entertainment, public radio weekend hit. And I just don't think that you can do that. Where did Car Talk come from? Car Talk was not the result of some committee that went into a room determined to kind of find a hit. No, Car Talk came out of that the primordial soup of public radio. 45 years ago, public radio was – no one knew what it was going to be. It was just a bunch of radio stations at universities, mostly universities across the country that were being run by hippies, hippies in their 20s who had – were just, you know, experimental people, really didn't have any kind of expectation or standard to uphold, and they just did crazy things. You know, Jane Christo, who was running the station where I used to work, WBUR in Boston, that's where Car Talk started. Jane Christo basically looked at these two, you know, working-class MIT guys – and said, hey, you're kind of funny. Do you want to come on the radio and talk about cars? And they did it. You know, I mean, honestly, Veronica, like if I were to pitch to you, forget the car in your head, forget that Car Talk exists for a second, right? Like what if I were to pitch to you, hey, I think that I have an idea for a hit public radio show. Two guys with working class Boston accents taking calls on car repair. Like, does that sound like a hit public radio show to you?
Oh, I mean, yeah, in retrospect, not so
in
much
in retrospect,
today.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, that's what I'm talking about is that it's, like, it's not something you're going to be able to contrive. These wonderful things, you know, Prairie Home Companion, too. Who would have thought that would have been a good idea? No one. It just came out of this period of experimentation where people were just throwing spaghetti against the wall, and those were the two strands that stuck because they're wonderful. But no one could have foreseen those as being hits.
Well, you mentioned the graying hippies that started public radio, or not crazy, you call them crazy hippies who started public radio. And that reminds me of this Washington Post article that ran not too long ago, talking about what they called the graying of public radio. And they talked about the decline in ratings in some of those big flagship programs you mentioned, things like All Things Considered, things like Morning Edition. Do you think those numbers are something to be worried about?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that the trend lines, the long-term trend lines for public radio listenership, and I say radio specifically, people listening over radio towers, those have been going down. Now, I will say, Veronica, that like something that we're seeing right now is that the numbers are shooting up all of a sudden. Ratings for All Things Considered, according to an internal memo that I saw recently that was written by NPR CEO Yarol Mohn, their ratings for All Things Considered, national ratings in the last ratings period spiked 40%. 40%. That's ginormous. Now, I'm a little bit skeptical about some methodological stuff that's at work in that, but certainly what's going on, where you can really attribute that is to the election. This election is bananas, and public radio listeners really, really care about it, and they are tuning into their stations in massive numbers, much more massive numbers than I would have ever expected. I predicted the death of radio a long time ago, and I've been proven wrong and wrong and wrong again. So right now, I mean, public radio people are feeling pretty good about ratings. Now, the question is that going to persist after this totally bananas election is over? Well, if we elect a bananas president, then maybe the interest will stay high for a while, and that'd be great. But I think that, you know, putting all of that aside, yes, the long term trend line is certainly down in terms of radio ratings. That's a different thing when you look at overall audience that's being served by public radio. And we know that as radio listenership goes down, we've also seen podcasts come out of nowhere. And public radio is absolutely owning the podcasting game right now. The top, you know, half of the top 20 podcasts on iTunes are generally public radio podcasts. So that's a new audience that we're growing. Webstream, right? So like right before I went live with you, I tweeted on my Twitter account that I would be going live with you. And I have a lot of friends and family who do not, you know, live in Wisconsin, and some of them are probably listening right now through a web stream. That web stream is not being captured by Nielsen's ratings numbers. So the rating, we actually kind of don't know how much the ratings are going down, because we know that a lot of people are listening to streaming and a lot of people are listening to podcasts. I have concerns about the overall overall audience declining for public radio for demographic reasons. But in terms of, like, you know, who's listening to what listening technology, I don't really think that we know how, if listening is going up or down.
So the evidence is hazy, Adam. And just briefly, what do you think we need to worry about in terms of, well, I guess, do we need to worry at all about the age of public radio listeners? Is that a legitimate question? You know, that eternal question, are younger people listening? Are they coming on board? Are they responding to younger hosts like Ari Shapiro, for instance?
Veronica, would you mind if I ask generally your age bracket?
I would mind very much.
Okay.
Let me tell you this. I'm public radio young. So can you guess what that means?
Yeah, I'm public radio young too.
No, okay? I think I'm slightly public radio older than that. But
neither of us are Clear Channel young. Sorry, iHeartRadio young. Okay, we're public radio young, and I bet that you have maybe gotten a few email complaints about, like, how, wow, that Veronica, she sounds so young. She's got a little bit of that vocal fry. Can you get her off? Get a real person up there. I certainly have gotten those kinds of emails over the course of my career. You know what we're seeing is that the core public radio audience has always been baby boomers. That's who it is. It's not necessarily that, like, our audience is aging. It's that our audience has always been baby boomers, and baby boomers are getting older. And that's starting to be a problem in the sense that baby boomers have these really particular values and aesthetic interests that and their use, but baby boomers as a demo have been used to having their needs catered to their entire freaking lives, okay? And they're not used to having to share things with other people. And you and I are trying to, like, make radio and make stuff that is going to be exciting to people our age and younger, but the aesthetic gulf between what we're going to do for them and what the baby boomers are expecting is widening. And we're, I think, increasingly having trouble serving both people, serving our core historic audience of baby boomers, but also creating stuff that's going to appeal to younger people. And that's a serious challenge.
We're talking with Adam Ragusa right now about the future of public radio in a new media era as a Prairie Home Companion, one of public radio's powerhouse shows, undergoes a transformation without Garrison Keillor. Adam is a journalist in residence at Mercer University, and he hosts and produces the weekly podcast called The Pub.
And we want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. What do you want from public radio in the future? Are there changes you think are overdue, or do you want more of the same? Do you include podcasts in your listening habits these days? If you're listening to us live, is it on a radio of some sort or on a high-tech device? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Adam Ragusa right now about the future of public radio. Adam is a journalist in residence at Mercer University, and he hosts and produces the weekly podcast, The Pub.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you like about public radio? What would you like to change? What do you wish had not changed? Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go to our first caller now. We've got Linda on the line in Madison. Linda, hi.
Hi. I'm part of the target audience. I'm a baby boomer.
Okay.
And I like it because it's a refuge and an intelligent conversation, especially Wisconsin public radio. But my daughter, who's a millennial, it's one of her favorite stations. It started as classical music when she was a baby. And then it went from classical music to Chapter a Day, another WPR original, to Prairie Home Companion,
So your daughter grew up listening, and now she's a public radio listener, which I have to say is what happened with me, too, and now I work in public radio. So, Adam, is that one way it works, that one generation passes it on to the next, the public radio listening bug?
Yeah, that's historically how it has worked, and maybe that will keep us going to a certain point. But, I mean, it's also the case that America is just getting to be a much more diverse place, and public radio, I don't think, can thrive on the historically white upper middle class, upper middle class audience that has been its core for its history, nor do I think that can it really fulfill its mission only speaking to that audience. I mean, what is the point of public broadcasting? It's spelled out right in the Public Broadcasting Act from 1968 that which specifically mentions that we're supposed to be serving underserved demographics. And so if we're only kind of passing public radio along from parent to child, we're not going to branch out into emerging America that we really should be serving.
I want to ask you about something you said. I hope you don't mind my sharing in an email when we talked about what we were going to talk about today. You said that...
No, I don't mind that at all.
Okay. So you said that public radio did have an opportunity now. You've been predicting the end of radio, but you think public radio has an opportunity to thrive, to change, to grow. And here's the part that people might be interested in hearing. You said, as long as public radio listeners calm down and stop acting like scalded cats when there's a change. So are the listeners part of the problem here? Is this the scalded cat phenomenon?
Yeah, and
part
I can say that because I don't work in public radio anymore. Like I'm a academia fat cat, you know, so I don't have to kind of live with the consequences of what I'm about to say like you do, Veronica, you know, which is that, like, yeah, I mean, this is something that public radio stations have dealt with forever, which is that if you make the slightest change, like a smart program director looks at some numbers and says, listen, I think that Wait Don't Tell Me could do a little bit better at 11 o'clock than it's doing at 10 o'clock. I'm going to move it, man. The rabble will surround the station with pitchforks and demand the heads of that program director. It's insane, okay? And that's, to a certain extent, that speaks to something really wonderful, which is that radio and audio more generally, podcasts do this too, really works its way into the rhythms of our life, the rituals of our life. And we come to really depend on it to be there for us when we mow the lawn every Saturday or whatever it is that we do when we listen to that particular show. So I know why people get so connected to it. But if you care about this, dear, I'm speaking to you, listener, directly right now. If you care about this institution, if you care about Wisconsin Public Radio, man, please ease up on them. Like they need to do some things that are a lot more dramatic than move wait from 10 to 11, okay, in order to figure out what public radio is going to be and should be in the 21st century. So please cut them some slack. Try to work with them, bear with them, and recognize, especially older listeners, you know, that the kinds of programming that they're going to need to be developing are not necessarily things that are going to speak to you. And I hope that you can just think about Wisconsin Public Radio not just as something that serves you, but as a common community resource, something that's supposed to make life better for everyone around you, and support it on that basis, even if it starts to move in directions that aesthetically or content-wise are things that don't really appeal to you.
Let's grab another call now. We've got Dag with us in Ashland. Hi, Dag.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I wanted to marry two of the concepts your guests put together, nerdiness and contrived, into contrived nerdiness.
Yeah.
And it just dominates now. It's like whatever, Ira Glass, This American Life has just become miserable. Now there's like this whole plethora of shows like Moth Radio Hour, where there's this wide-eyed little boy pretense.
Dang.
So,
all right, so Dag, not a fan of some shows or some tones. I don't know. What do you hear when you hear a comment like that, Adam?
I hear something that I think I share. I mean, I think This American Life is a phenomenal show. It is extraordinarily important, and it still, you know, pound for pound, I think, fulfills the mission of public radio better than anything else that's out there. But it's so good that it has spawned so many imitators, people trying to imitate that very, very peculiar aesthetic. And that's not so good. But it's also the case that I think that part of that is what we were talking about earlier, Veronica, which is that public radio has just been playing it safe for 40 years. And, you know, if it looked and smelled like like something that's already been a public radio hit, they thought, well, this might do well on public radio too. And that's where I think you've been getting this kind of self-similarity in the product. And I think that as especially with the birth, with podcasting becoming so exciting and so vibrant, you're getting institutions out there taking more chances and basically saying, hey, you kid, I don't understand what your thing is, but you seem to have something neat going on. Why don't you try making a show? It can just go on the internet. You're not going to do too much damage there. And then we'll see what comes of it. And we're seeing really cool things come of it.
Well, let's talk about that podcasting thing, because on the one hand, it seems like a great opportunity. On another, we've heard critiques from people saying that NPR hasn't moved fast enough on podcasting, been aggressive enough, and that it may have already lost the ball game. What do you say to that?
I don't think that that particular critique is true, and that's a critique that's been made by my friend Adam Davidson, who used to be an economics reporter for NPR, and I agree with Adam on a lot of things. I don't think that NPR has been too slow to embrace podcasting, but you know what folks need to understand is that there's a sensitivity here. The public radio system that is all a bunch of these NPR member stations like Wisconsin Public Radio that then support NPR, it depends on the primacy of over-the-air radio. When people listen to programs directly through the internet, it kind of threatens the entire organizational structure and the economy of public radio in a way that is sensitive for NPR to try to handle, and that's just something that we're going to have to negotiate. The one thing, that's really inside baseball for people to understand. I don't think you need to really understand it that much, though. Feel free to listen to my show and hear all about it every week. The one thing that I think listeners do need to think about is that it has been the primacy of radio and Wisconsin Public Radio being an intermediary for getting that NPR news out of Washington in Madison or wherever you are in Wisconsin. That relationship has been what has essentially subsidized all of the local programming that Wisconsin Public Radio does. This show right now, Central Time, in effect being subsidized by that relationship, all of the local reporting. And as people start to listen to stuff directly through the internet and not through the radio, I'm worried about how local programming in places like Wisconsin is going to be sustained financially. And so I just hope that everyone thinks about that and is aware of that dynamic when Pledge Drive comes around.
Adam, we leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was Adam Ragusa, journalist in residence at Mercer University's Center for Collaborative Journalism. He hosts and produces the weekly podcast, The Pub, for the public broadcasting trade publication Current. And don't forget, you can weigh in on this. How do you feel about the future of public radio? Do you think NPR and public radio in general are well poised? Are you going to keep listening? What about the next generation? Let us know on the Central Time Facebook page.